Back for another episode. My name is Gregory Q. Jenkins, and this is the Quintasia Podcast. Now, from time to time, point of privilege, I've had several people on the podcast, from different walks of life is not what I want to say, but from different parts of my life. Don't you be laughing over there. From different parts of my life, it's been a pleasure and an honor to interview these people. Now, my guest today, this gentleman, I definitely wanted to get him on the podcast because we talk about film, entertainment, social justice, all that stuff all the time. So. Point of disclosure, this person is my best friend. Sorry, I don't have really good taste in people, but,
ditto.
And we've literally known each other all our lives. I think I referenced Gary, at some point during the different podcasts. I know I did because, his parents and my parents were best friends. So that's how, our families came together. And so it is a privilege and pleasure to welcome to the podcast, Gary Keys. How are you, sir?
Thank you so much, my friend.
You're welcome.
I use that term lightly, too. So don't
yes, he's not kidding.
Don't get used to that.
So... just to set the stage, ladies and gentlemen, so you understand what you're in for today, this is going to be the Black version of Two Grumpy Old Men.
I thought maybe you would be the two old men from the Muppet Show in the balcony.
That too. So either one of those parallels, can take that, and that's what you're in for today. Mm-hmm. So why don't we get started and let's dive right in and see where this conversation takes us. I want to talk about, a topic that I hear a lot, even in your household, because also his niece, ladies and gentlemen, we've had her on this podcast, Ms. Mm-hmm. Tiana Colbert. She's been on here. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to think it's safe to say that Tiana has probably a different opinion or different feel about physically going to the movie theaters than Gary and I do.
Yeah, but absolutely.
But let's talk about the streaming experience versus the theater experience. What's your preference?
Oh, my preference will always be, until my dying day, will be the theater. You know, going into the movie theater.
And why is that?
Well, let's be honest. Even though streaming is very, it's very convenient. How can you beat wanting to see a movie in your underwear, your slippers, sitting on your couch with food, your own food. You know, you don't have to drive to where you were, to a movie theater. You don't have to do that much planning. It's like watching regular television, except it's a movie. But that's convenient. That's fun. But the real experience of being immersed in a story that some filmmaker has done and has put their blood, sweat, and tears. Even if it's not that, even if it's a tentpole movie, made by Disney or whatever, you cannot beat that experience being around other people and being connected in that way. And, you know, are we sharing the same feelings? Are we picking up the same vibes from this character? As one whole group, do we actually know what's going to happen next at the same time? You can't beat that. Streaming is great. It'll be here forever, I'm assuming. But you can't beat the theater experience. It's just too phenomenal. It dates back to when we were all in caves together and we were sharing, you know, around a fire, a pit fire, you know, and we had one older, you know, one older senior cave person, that'd be me, who would tell an old story, you know, everybody would gather around and listen to that, you know, and take that all in, and they all, ooh, ah, ooh, you know, other than going oogu boogu, but they, you know, they all be able to, you know, pick that up, you know, and that's the same thing. That is definitely the same experience. You can't beat that. You just can't.
Well, you know, I 100% agree with you. There's that, and I happen to, and I'm gonna go further than that. I'm gonna make a prediction because you know, I think one of the things that technology has broken us in some sort of ways, yeah. Even though in terms of connectedness, you can have a Zoom with anyone anywhere in the world,
yeah,
at any time as long as you both have an internet connection. Yeah. Despite that, I think we see it, and it's not just in our country, record levels of loneliness and depression. So I think that you will, I don't think the era, there's a lot of people who are predicting the death of movie theaters. I say no. Mm-hmm. I can understand, and I am friends with some people who are, you know, from the disability community, and who I can understand their point of view that because these theaters are mostly not hospitable to them, you know, yeah. Streaming yeah. actually is a useful option. And I'm not like you. I don't think streaming is going away. But one thing is for sure, streaming as we now know it has to change because there's only one, maybe now two of all of the streamers that are profitable. And that's the dirty little secret.
That's true, right.
More about that a little later. Yeah. But the point that I'm making now is I think because we as human beings still have a need for human connection.
Yeah.
Going to the movie theater, like you said, I think the key part of that, what you said, is having a whole bunch of people experiencing the same thing.
Right. At
the same time.
Right.
That's easy now to start up conversations with people you don't know because you all just experienced the same thing.
The same, absolutely same. Well, I even just saw recent, I think it was a recent report on Al Jazeera where they were reporting the low birth rate numbers that Japan is actually worried for. And in the report, they stated that a lot of the youth are not getting married because they're not meeting each other. They're living, if you look at their homes, their apartments, everything is in the apartment. You know, a lot of that also stems also from them, you know, working very long hours and everything, obviously. But also the level amount of socialization is really, really low in Japan. And they're not meeting each other. Everything that they would do normally in a social situation, you know, going on a date or what have you, going to dinner, going to the movie theater, going to movies, they're not doing. They're doing it at home. You know, everything is around them. Their food, their entertainment, where they sleep. You know, and everything. It's one of the things that their government believes is actually partly responsible for their low birth rates right now, and their marriage numbers too are very low too. So you know, That's an extensive problem. You know, that's a dangerous problem. Actually, you don't want your numbers too low, in your population, but you can see where that is almost the same thing what you were referring to. That's why going to the movie theater is just an experience you won't be able to change. You know, you won't be able to, and you shouldn't be. You want to socialize with other human beings. We're social animals. How can we not want to be around each other? As much as we want to, you know, knock each other off all the time, we need one another. You know, we need to talk to one another. We need to know what the other person is thinking. Now, that's helpful. That to me empowers a society. It doesn't make it weaker. You know, so, you know, once again, going back, making full circles, movie theaters are not going anywhere, in my opinion.
I totally agree with that. And for those of you who are, you know, happy about the death of movie theaters, I don't share your outlook. I do think what is rapidly changing, and obviously I want to be a part of that change, is the content. Mm. And if you want to get people, if you want to get butts in the seats, you've got to get content that are going to appeal to those butts.
Exactly.
And the demographic makeup of this country has shifted radically.
Exactly. Yes.
And I understand when the average picture now costs somewhere in the neighborhood, according to Studio Binder, about $65 million. You know, you get in a defensive mode, because that's a lot of money. Like, oh, man. So you're not risk-taking anymore. You just want to wash, rinse, and repeat. Mm. And just kind of, so you get, you know, Superman 52, you know, or Spider-Man 97 or whatever numbers were up.
No,
and things like that. And and those movies are great and they're fun, but we want to see something beyond that. I mean, we don't really need the 92nd reimagining of the origin story of Spider-Man.
Exactly.
We got it. Even if you're not a comic book fan, I think at this point now, you got it. You got it. We got it. So, you know, eventually you have to move on. And fortunately, there's a treasure trove of stories that haven't been tapped yet. That's what I'm trying to do, is tap those stories. Because
how many biofilms even can be made of, I was thinking about this the other day, of Elvis Presley. You know, we've had a numerous amount of films, you know, you could rattle them off. The most recent one was with Austin Butler.
Right.
It was a good performance and what have you. It was an okay film, in my opinion. But where is the film about Little Richard? You know, who, to me, if you know his history in music and what have you, is actually the true creator of, you know, who's the real king of rock and roll. You know, where is his bio picture? You know,
I think there is one in the works.
That's great. Yeah, if that's true, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, but as you said a few seconds ago, there's an endless amount of stories that we don't know that, you know,
exactly.
And yeah, it's going to take some money. Yeah. That's the reason why Oppenheimer was a hit, because it was a very interesting story by a very interesting man during a very interesting time in the history of this country.
Right.
You know, they had no clue that the nuclear weapons would go off in one area. There was a potential that it could ignite the atmosphere and kill everyone.
Yep.
You know, they didn't know that. You know, it was a gamble. They did the math. Anybody who knows the story, they did the mathematics. You know, they did the science. Said, okay, it should just explode. It shouldn't vaporize the planet. You know. But you know, that to me, that's a very interesting story, and he ended up being very anti-war.
Yes.
You know, so you know that you know those are stories we need. You know, especially coming from our side of it. You know, there's so many people, African American people who did things that none of us knew, the things we take advantage of, the everyday things that we use in our lives were created by African Americans, and whose stories, who have rich stories, and we don't know any of it, you know. And that, to me, that's not shame, that's a crime, in my opinion, you know.
And along those lines, you know, of story, and I'm so happy that the story was told. Like the story of Bayard Rustin, and people, if you haven't seen that movie, it's on Netflix. You that's a must.
Absolutely.
And absolutely. I was, you know, like Tom Hanks' reaction to The Watchmen, you know, the opening scene in the pilot episode, and he's like, no one ever taught me, you know, about this incident. The Tulsa riots. And
exactly.
And I'm right up there. I didn't, you know, I knew by the time that episode aired, I knew about it, but I don't want to get into that one. I'm going to stick with Bayard Rustin. I went to an elementary school that, you know, they taught us about civil rights leaders. I mean, that was just, it was a big thing. Mm. They never taught me about Bayard Rustin. Mm-hmm. Never. And I know why. I know why, because he did not fit the narrative.
Exactly.
But think about the importance. I mean, I can't stress this enough. When, you know, you've heard me give this speech many times. You know, in the entertainment business, we're not making widgets here. You know, this is a, you know, we cast a big shadow.
Mm,
yeah. And representation means so much.
It does.
And it's so powerful. Imagine if you were a member of the LGBTQ plus community, and then you come across the story of Bayard Rustin,
mm-hmm.
who was an openly gay man.
Openly, right. Exactly.
In the 19, you know, in the civil rights era, the 1950s, mm-hmm. 40s, 50s, and 60s. And he was the key architect of the March on Washington.
That's right.
The bus boycotts, all of that. And he has been largely left out of history. But the true fact of it is that he was openly embraced, mm-hmm. maybe not initially, but ultimately they got to that point by Dr. Martin Luther King. And why is that important? Because here's a man that's a reverend,
mm-hmm.
that according to and he, you know, according to his theology, you know, this is a man that you wouldn't think that he would be friends with.
Exactly, right.
But he openly embraced that person and the character of that person. Think of what that says to a person from the LGBTQ community.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's like, okay, I'm seeing, you know, we can have an impact. That's the story that, man, did that need to be told. And I should have known about him, you know. I'm mad that, you know, I was never really.
Well, that's not your fault. That's not my fault. That's not your fault. That is the fault of the nation. That's the fault of the country. Where you have these great people who did so much for us, but because they were not part of the quote unquote normal side of the community, that their story is somehow submerged, you know, or just, you know, or we don't talk about that, you know, we thank the person, but we don't talk about that person or what have you. Rustin is not alone in that. There's so many people in the civil rights movement whose stories we don't know because of who they were as people. You know, and that can extend not only to African Americans but to indigenous people. You know, stories that we should know, that should be part of our social studies growing up, You know, she, as we know about the Revolutionary War, we should know about these people, you know, everything about them and how they really fully shaped the society we're living in currently. You know, because a lot of what we take granted for our everyday individual freedoms are because of the sacrifices of people like him, you know, and others that we don't know, and we should know them. You know?
We definitely, he deserves to be remembered.
And absolutely.
He deserves our respect.
Yeah.
And
he shouldn't be a name. He shouldn't be a name on the side of a school or a street in Harlem. And the general population don't know who that is. Who is that person? Who is that person? And you have that a lot in the country. You know, you have a signpost, especially in the South, of Black people who've done things, but we don't know who they are. Who are they? You know, why don't we know who they are? You know,
and you know, it's because we like to cherry pick things in history, depending upon the perspective of the person writing the history. Exactly. And you know, because he was my theory, and I think it's pretty much borne out by the facts. You know, because he was gay, because that went quote against the mainstream of, you know, the people we're talking about, he was just kind of glossed over. But right. I think it represents a very powerful point. These are not this is normal, you know. Having gay people have been a part of our society forever, you know, right. Regardless of your religious beliefs, the presence of gay people have been here for forever. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I think we all need to learn, we can have different religions, we can have different points of perspective, but we all need to have grace and to allow for other belief systems, other whatever that may not comport to our own.
Exactly.
But allow every human being the right to go and, you know, live and love as they see fit without us importing our belief systems
on,
our
right.
cultural exactly. knowledge upon to them, and just, you know,
right.
acknowledge their existence and enjoy the human being in your presence.
Exactly. It can only having them be part of society and being known to everyone can only enrich the culture. It doesn't take away, it doesn't weaken it. It just enriches it, to me, in my opinion. So
fear is never something that is going to enhance society.
No, it doesn't.
You know, there's no good that comes from fear. No,
absolutely not.
And you know, nope. And you know, that's how we will get in trouble, is if we try to go through history and take out the parts of history that we don't like to suit our narrative. Now, that's not new. Human beings have been doing that forever. But we have to, I think we should be far enough along in human history where we understand now the dangers of doing that. Mm-hmm. And we personally, everyone has to invest in, well, I want to make sure that I'm getting the whole picture, not just someone's particular perspective.
Or a diluted version of it too.
Exactly.
You know, that doesn't do anything. You know, right. But no, I agree with you with that. We've seen this story before where societies attempt to do that. You know, one of the first signs of that you could tell is when they begin to burn books, because books say something that they disagree with, or the author, you know, happens to be of a particular gender or sexuality, you know, and all of a sudden the works that would add to the strength of the culture of the society is now considered something that could be burned, you know, and that's that loss, a loss of great knowledge is will always do. And societies you see that do that eventually do go the way of the dinosaur. You know, they do. I mean, it takes time, but they do eventually fall away. You know, we can't as a civilization, we can't. There's no way in the world we can move forward, you know, by denying half of our population because they see the world differently, or they love differently, or they believe differently. You know, you can't. Civilization will not go forward that long.
You would have think we would have learned that lesson by now.
You would think so. And I think we are. It's slow. You know, evolution is slow. Evolution doesn't go by our time. Evolution is slow. Hopefully we'll learn. We'll get better at it. You know, that's the goal. That's the reason why I go going full circle again back to what you're saying. And this sounds like we're going all the way in a different direction. But there is something about having film, especially film as an art form, that can not only enrich, but it can also educate too, you know. And that's the reason why I wholeheartedly agree with you that we need more films about subjects like Resident and other people who don't know. That added something to us as a people. You know, I think we have to almost like slowly turn the dial a bit, you know. And you know me, Gregory, I'm an old sci-fi fan. I like comics and superheroes and what have you, but we need more stories about more real people, you know. We really can't that much have anything in common with Batman. You know, we're not billionaires. You know, we don't fly around at night, you know, smashing criminals over the head, what have you. But we can understand a person who is being, whose people are being trampled on for their land. You know what I'm saying? We can relate to that, you know. That and within other stories as well of people who are oppressed, or people who grew up impoverished, but have a great idea and through their own will and tenacity, they end up, you know, being adding something to the population and to their community. Yep. You know, like Madam C.J. Walker, someone mm-hmm. like that. You know, who did so much for the Black community, and what have you. And those are the stories we need to see more of. You know, those are the ones that will challenge us. You know, as individual human beings, say, she did something that, and they're not superheroes. There's something that I can do. There's something I can reach for. You know, and something I can apply to my own life, you know, everything. And that's why they're really an influence on us, more than Spider-Man, actually. As much as I like Spider-Man.
I'll say this point, and then I'll pivot to the next topic. Because you mentioned Madam C.J. Walker, but like, if those of you who are watching and or listening to this, if you don't know who Madam C.J. Walker is, go look her up. Because this was a Black woman who became a millionaire in the 1920s.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to say that again. 1920s.
Yes.
This person did this.
Yes. And they were still openly lynching Black people.
Yes. So she was both, you know, Black.
Yeah.
And a woman.
Yes.
And managed to get to that level. So now I know that there have been, you know, lots of attempts. And there were a couple of projects that made it to the screen, I believe. But I think they're still trying to come up with the definitive project. And I might be wrong on that, but maybe it already was made and I wasn't, you know, I missed it. But so don't send me angry letters if I missed it, folks, because I know that Oprah was trying to tell that story for the longest time, but I'm not aware of where that project stands. But yeah. Anyway, that's a perfect example of something that, you know, a story that I think it doesn't matter what color you are or what your background is. It's an amazing story about an amazing meme. So on a to pivot to a slightly lighter note, what was the first movie you fell in love with?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, I was going to say something, you know, I'm thinking right now of something, you know, that a lover of world cinema would choose, you know, when asked that question. It'd be some sort of a wide and eclectic sort of film or something, you know, some deep socially conscious film or something like that, you know, or the filmmaker would be, you know, someone like maybe Orson Welles or perhaps Melvin Van Peebles or someone like that, you know, that wide spectrum of people. But no, it's for me, speaking for me, just for me, it was that one little crazy little film in 1977 called Star Wars. And the reason why I used Star Wars, A New Hope by George Lucas, is because before then, I accepted film. You know, I watched movies and I loved movies and what have you. And, you know, being very young, and what have you, but I had no clue what was really behind a film. You know, how it was made, how it was written. I didn't even know films were written, to be perfectly honest. Before 1976, I didn't know what a script was, you know, or what does a producer do, or, you know, even when you see at the end of the film, it says directed by, I had no clue what directed by meant. You know, I just, you know, I was a kid, you know, what have you. I have to be honest, Mr. Lucas opened that world up for a lot of us. I'm sure you agree, because we're basically the same generation. The first time I learned is through specials and stories and behind the scenes on how the film was made and the music and how it was shot, what a Panavision camera was. All of a sudden, these things came to me, I'm talking only about right now. I'm just talking about the technical side, but it's also, I think I have to give credit. I have to give it to Star Wars. Star Wars was the one that sort of opened me up emotionally to film. Before Star Wars, I took in film. You know, I took it in. Ooh, you know, whether it was scary or whether it was action filled, what have you. But where it moved me emotionally, off kilter the story was, it moved me. And I'm confident to say I know I'm not alone in that, but at least two generations.
That, you know, I'm going to cheat and I'm going to get two answers. The first choice is the same as yours, because I have to be honest. The first movie that I saw in the theater that really I fell in love with was unquestionably Star Wars.
Yeah.
I was no passionate lover of film until I saw Star Wars. Yeah. Star Wars completely ignited my imagination. Mm-hmm. And Star Wars, you know, whether you, and I know that there are a lot of sci-fi people non-sci-fi people who maybe you consider Star Wars not a serious movie,
right?
Because it is sci-fi. But when we look at, you know, the art of storytelling and the art of understanding archetypes and how they play out in a story, it's a perfect example of, you know, the classic story arc that you have, you know, a classic protagonist, a classic antagonist, you know, the hero's journey.
Kent, you know, a hero with a thousand faces, you know? Yeah, exactly.
You definitely see that, you know, in that first film. I'm sorry, I'm old school. I don't call it Star Wars A New Hope because when it came out, it was Star Wars. you know, the very first Star Wars. And you have all of that in there. And plus, you just had special effects that did not exist for that movie. They created our company to create the effects, you know, something, what they did with motion cameras. Simply amazing. So that's first my answer. And then, but the first movie that this was a movie, but I saw it on television, but I have to mention it. And not because it's on a lot of critics' list. I'm just talking about me personally.
Yeah.
Of a movie like Casablanca. What makes that so, and why I appreciate that film even more, because if you've ever attempted to make a film or write a film, you know how hard that a task that truly is. Yeah. That, you know, everybody thinks like one person wrote Casablanca. I think there were five writers on Casablanca. Mm-hmm. And not only that, when they started shooting it, from what I understand, they didn't know how the movie was going to end.
Exactly, right.
So the fact that when you look at it now and you look at this cohesive thing that somehow came together, it is, and again, classic hero's journey. All of that, those elements in there, some of the, you know, classic lines and dialogue. My favorite, of course, is, you know, when the inspector comes in and shuts the place down for gambling. He says, "I am shocked. You're winning, sir. Thank you." just a classic line, things like that. I really do. It's one of the things that, you know, I don't care how many times I've seen it. If I happen to be flipping across the dial and it's on, it still draws me in.
I wish I liked Casablanca as much as the general population. I know for some reason, it never did it for me. Going back to what I was saying about Star Wars was that other than opening my love, my continuous love affair of cinema, how things are made, which I found absolutely fascinating because of that film and because of the documentaries that came afterwards on how it was made. You know, it was an education for me, but it also opened up everything else for me when it came to film. All of a sudden, the films that were older than Star Wars, like Casablanca, or my Casablanca was always Citizen Kane. You know, all of a sudden, Citizen Kane was aha! Oh, that's how it's done. Oh, I see what he's trying to do. You know, oh, I understand her character. You know, more, and it just blossomed after that. All of a sudden, everything just wide open. Just came wide open for me, and I have to. If I ever ran to George Lucas, I wouldn't just thank him for Star Wars, you know, and everything. I would thank him for really helping me, have a passion, for cinema, for film. You know, he was the first one that did it for me. You know, I have to be honest, you know, everything else, just like I said, everything else just came. Oh, I got that. Oh, all of a sudden now it's ever since then, it's been like a smorgasbord for me. Anything that's cinema, I just eat it up, you know, good and bad. I love bad films when they're trying to be bad and when they're not trying to be bad. I love film. I love film. I can find a love affair in any sort of film, no matter how cheaply it was made, no matter how expensive it was made, big stars, no stars. I love cinema. Cinema is just, you know, my life.
Yeah. I'm going to hold you to it as we start releasing our films. I'm going to remind you. So if you can, I'm going to say, I thought you loved all films, even bad ones.
That doesn't mean I don't critique them. You know, a film I critique, I can find a passion in it. That's reason. Let me tell you something about me and film. If I don't say a thing about film or your film or anybody's film, that you should be worried. At least for my attention. That means you mean nothing to me. You know, you might as well be smoke to me. You know,
that I think is the biggest lesson. You know, I say this to the people I work with all the time. Yeah. The first commandment of entertainment is thou shalt not be boring.
Yes.
Yeah. If I release something and I've experienced that with the Null Hypothesis, we've had a range of reactions. Now, when it was a web series, that was the first thing that I did. Didn't have the first four episodes. I did everything myself. So, you know, the fifth episode was a jump because we had an actual crew. And again, I was still learning how to bring all of those elements together to make a more professional thing. But the one thing I quickly knew, and I still remember some of the funniest comments that I had about it, though, but I was happy because indifference is what will kill you.
Yes.
I want you to either love it or hate it. Obviously, I would prefer you to love it, but, you know, at least you had a reaction.
Right.
You make content that has no reaction.
Right.
That's something that's a problem because that means that it did not connect.
Right.
With you on any level. And those are the films that, you know, go into the dustbin of history and nobody ever looks at again.
Right, exactly. So, exactly.
That's not the content that I wanted to make.
It is not, to me, there's nothing sadder than a film that just doesn't move me either way.
That just doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. That to me, that's sad. That's like something that's soulless in a way, you know, it's just matter. You know what I'm saying? It's just images caught on emotion. What does it matter? It didn't do anything for me, you know, what have you. To me, you just said it, film has got to release some sort of reaction to you. I hated that picture. That if I was a filmmaker, I would love to hear that. I know that sounds counterintuitive, but I'm serious. If it's my film and, you know, I made Piranha 8 in 3D, you know, and, you know, people are filing out of the theater and say, oh my God, that was the worst film I ever, you know, you hear that and you say, oh, you know, God, they don't like it, but my God, they had some sort of reaction. If they all walked past me and they were talking about what they had to do on Monday morning, I would be floored. I'd explode. That would hurt me more than anything else. You know, say you didn't like the film. You know, say the film bored the hell out of you. Say the film made your kid too scary to go in the water again, whatever. But to say, I have to do laundry tomorrow. Leaving the theater? No. No, that would kill me. I'm sorry.
Definitely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you have experienced what it is like to be a part of our conversations. they normally go on not longer. Really. But, well, no, not really. You've heard the PG version of our conversation, because I do want this, to the widest widest audience possible. Mm-hmm. But sadly, we are out of time. And, it was a great conversation. Again, I hope that people will, for lovers of this art, I hope you find it entertaining. I hope it'll inspire you. Go out, go support your films in the theaters, and then watch it when it comes on streaming. You know, if, especially if it's a story that speaks to you somehow. If you want to see more of them, please support those.
Right. Right. So you can't complain later on and say, "Where right. where all the good films are at?" Well, you got to be
going to support them when they come out. And you know, that's perfect. The origin, folks. Seriously. I'm going to show up at your house. If you don't go see that movie, I swear right now, you will never know a day of peace unless you go out and see that movie. Okay. I'm going to be checking. I'm going to be checking. I'm going to say, I want a manifest of every ticket that was sold. And I want to know who went. And if you're not on that list, you're going to hear from me.
I'm coming to get you.
That's right. All right. So I'm going to sign off now. Thank you for listening to our podcast, and I will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.